today on Mother Mayhem.
Considering your attachment styles and the role it takes in all of your lives is really incredibly important here. If you can do it in a loving way for yourselves, that's absent of judgment, you really stand to learn so much about yourselves. Welcome back to Mother Mayhem, the Narcissistic Abuse Recovery Podcast for Daughters. Hi, I'm your host, Heather Gray. Today I get the opportunity to introduce you to Erica. Now, I named her after Erica Kane on All My Children, and I've been having a silly little laugh about this because All My Children was never one of my shows. I always just assumed Erica was the heroine of the show and that she was this long-suffering character who had been through a lot and came out standing on the other side. It all becomes a little bit funnier when I tell you that our listener, Erica, doesn't even reside in the United States, has no idea who or what I'm talking about. So of course, me being me, went and did a little Wikipedia search only to find out that Erica Kane was not, in fact, the heroine of All My Children. She was often the protagonist, and that is sure going to teach me not to name my listeners after characters I'm not as familiar with in the future. And I have to tell you that I almost renamed our listener after reading up on Miss Erica Kane. But here's the thing about our listener, Erica. She does need some help accepting herself. She does need some help getting unapologetic about wanting to be seen and wanting to be understood. She's carrying the shame for having feelings that she doesn't think she should have. And I think she actually could benefit from having a little bit of Erica Kane in her. So I might very well regret this later when everyone tells me more about Erica Kane in my inbox. But dear listener, I think it's okay for you to have a little bit of fight in you. So I am going to go with it. And you can all yell at me about it in the comments, I'm sure. Today, I'm going to be sharing Erica's story for her. It has a personal nature to it, and she's gone through a lot, and her preference was that I offer more of a generalized summary of the issues that are at hand for her to provide some perspective without making her story too identifiable. As a reminder here, we are a trauma recovery show. Beginning, middle, and end, we talk about the hard things here. So a piece of what we have to talk about today deals with suicide. And that might not be a topic that you can handle right now. It may be too close to home, it might re-trigger you, or it could cause some uncomfortable feelings for you in your body. Only you are going to know what's best for you, what can help versus hurt, and what you can handle right now. This might need to be an episode that you put down for now until it is a better time, or it might be an episode you just need to come back to when you have some more space. If you need grounding support, use it. Remember, you can deep breathe, you can relax your body, or you can ask a supportive person in your life to listen to the show with you. It's important that you give yourselves a care plan for any episode of this show that may feel like it could be too much. Sometimes you might know this at the outset, other times you don't know until I'm digging in and talking more. If it hits you that this conversation is a bit too much, please give yourselves permission to walk away. Of course, I want all of you recovering more than anything, but I also want you to feel supported in your recovery. And when it comes to a podcast, I don't think support should hurt. So I'm going to introduce you to Erica. And like so many of you, Erica has been through a hell of a lot, and she really is still standing. But the impacts of multiple traumas have left her a little bit unsure of herself. Memories from the past reverberate within her, and she struggles to believe that she's ever going to be fully able to put them down once and for all. And also, she feels a little bit lost as to where to start. A lot of Erica's trauma and story kind of crumbled down around her after the suicide of someone she knew. This horrible loss forced Erica to revisit her own secret failed suicide attempt as a young teen. Her dad had found out about it soon after it happened, but never acknowledged it, never checked in with her about it, and never followed up. In her family, Erica's mom ruled the roost and controlled everyone, including Erica's dad. Control was Erica's mother's weapon of choice, and her desire to control everything, one of the things that Erica's mother wanted was to be closer to Erica, always comparing other mother-daughter relationships to their own and never feeling like it measured up. In her late teens, Erica's mother, in true all my children fashion, I might add, if we're being honest, confessed to Erica that she was having an affair. When the secret came out and the family blew up for a bit, it was Erica who received the pressure to mediate the family fix, and she did so, but not without great cost to herself. As an adult, Erica is now married and she's in a healthy relationship, but she continues with a lifelong struggle of seeking approval and attention from others, particularly from men. She identifies herself as a huge people pleaser, and she's writing to the show for help with understanding this, but also wants help in navigating a relationship with her dad, which is a relationship that Erica's mom only allows when she's present for it. It is rare for Erica to be able to be alone with her dad. This is the world of hurt that Erica is asking for help to make sense of. And we're all just going to take a deep breath because that really was a lot. Erica, you have really been through a lot. And it makes a lot of sense to me that figuring out where to begin with recovery is going to be a challenge. There's so much to cover, so much to understand. And of course, there's a lot to piece together. It makes sense to me that you're not quite sure as to where you're going to start. And I know that you're a faithful listener of the show and that you've been following it since the beginning, but I still want to offer you that quick reminder of where I started this show. Once we named the trauma of being the daughter of a narcissistic mother, I then worked with all of you on the core pieces of building a better relationship with yourself. That was way back in episode 3. If any of you need a reminder, I also, for that episode, I did do a companion guide. I packed it with journal prompts to get you thinking about the relationship you have with yourself. We've done more than 30 episodes since then. So even if you went through those prompts when the show first aired, it probably wouldn't hurt any of you to go through them again. Some of you, after doing some of the healing, may actually need to reintroduce yourselves to yourselves and learn more about who you are now, what you think, what you believe, and what you value since doing some of that healing work. However, Erica, there's something important to recognize, and that this is a truth and a reality that you share with a lot of Mayhem listeners. Your mother isn't the only thing that has happened to you. She's not the only thing you're trying to survive, because holy heck, you were once hurt so bad. You once felt so scared, so lost, mad, that you wanted to leave the world, and you actually tried to do that, Erica. And I have to say right away, I'm really glad you're here. I'm glad that all of you listening who share this part of Erica's story, I'm glad that you're here too with us. Childhood abuse and neglect and abandonment, they leave a mark. And suicidal ideation and attempts can become part of that trauma recovery story. Your attempt was an expression of your pain. It was a behavior that showed up because the pain became so awful. And your dad, well, he just went and threw a blanket over all of it and pretended that it didn't happen. Now, I know that in our exchange that you showed your dad grace and gave him the benefit of the doubt and allowed for the possibility that he didn't know what he had come across. Erica, I have to tell you that while I admire the grace you're willing to have about this, it isn't serving you. Your father failed you all those years ago. He failed to ask questions. He failed to learn more. He failed to check in with you. He failed. and we can make room for the idea that his daughter making a suicide attempt was likely traumatic for him himself. He likely hoped it wasn't true, and that if he didn't give it attention, it would just go away. We can list all of the reasons why he failed to show up, and they may have some validity. But in this instance, his failure was one of epic proportions. And you have to know that. You have to believe that. And here's why. You were young when this happened. So as adults, we can talk off the cuff and we can say your dad is an ass for ignoring you like that. We can call him names. Lord knows I did when I read your letter. We can know all about the reasons people shut down, but that doesn't aid in trauma recovery. Grace doesn't aid in trauma recovery because it invalidates little girl Erica and her experience. Happily married Erica, who made it despite her father, can show grace, and I respect you for your ability to do that. But what matters here is how little girl Erica interpreted all of this. What is the story she told herself? What did it mean to her when her dad found out and did nothing? What did she think? What did she feel? How did she interpret her value or the worth of her feelings? We don't know, but we can sure as hell guess that little girl Erica was left with the belief that her pain didn't matter. She was invisible. She wasn't seen. She didn't matter. So of course, even with some healing and perspective, adult Erica wants to be seen, wants attention, and wants to know that she matters. She's making up for so much lost time, and she's also trying to rewrite this narrative. She's trying to get the emotionally unavailable people to pay attention to her. Her husband is loving, her kids, her family, the people who know her heart see her and love her. But that love doesn't always soothe the gaping hole of the people who fail to show up so often. So of course you're trying to fill that hole. Of course you are. And Erica, you make so much sense to me here. Your pain makes sense to me. I see you, and I really want you to just sit with me for a little bit longer so I can help. Now, this is probably going to be hard to hear, so we got to go and do the whole deep breath thing. Take a deep breath. And I want you, as you do that, to think of the listeners of this show sitting in a circle, holding hands around you, protecting you while you hear your story and allow yourself to be healed and supported in this moment. Now, back in episode 15, we talked about enabling fathers, and I acknowledge that a large reason for their ineptitude was their own trauma. And yes, we can show compassion for that. But again, as with your suicide attempt, your father was absent from your childhood. You watched him repeatedly not choose you, and he modeled for you that you don't stand up for yourself. He didn't have his own back. He didn't protect you, his relationship with you, or his relationship with himself for that matter. So of course the idea of standing up for yourself, of taking up space, or going against the grain in any kind of way is a uniquely foreign concept for you. Of course you're now an adult who struggles with people-pleasing. People-pleasing's how you survived, and we're so very glad you survived. But again, we have to look at how little girl Erica interpreted all of this. What did she think of a dad who didn't defend himself? What did that make her think of her mom? What stories did she create about the whole thing? See, that's the path I really need to take you on here. This is how you have a better relationship with yourself. You know the Erica you are today, but we need to get to know little girl Erica and learn about what she thinks and how she interprets things. Then we can invite wise mind into the conversation. Present day wise mind We might need little Erica to stop thinking X. We might need little girl Erica to believe Y. We might want her to think Z. We need to go back to these traumas and the hurtful moments and see what stories and narratives you created from them. We want to know which ones we need to keep and which ones no longer serve you. So to start, you might picture yourself back at one of the more benign moments. Not the most intense, but an average dinner time or average bedtime or average homework time. Picture Erica today with wise mind, bringing little girl Erica back to her childhood. Hold her hand. See what she sees and how she experiences it. And tell her what you want her to know, to think, and to feel instead. This gets really esoteric and pie in the sky and above a lot of people's heads when I get all psychobabble like this. So I want to bring it down a little bit to something that's more real and more tangible. And it's my experience that when I'm teaching a new skill, it's easier to not teach that skill to the person about the person. It might be easier for you, Erica, and everybody listening, if you don't think about bringing your own little girl selves back to the scene of the crime, so to speak. To learn how to do this, I'm going to invite you to use me as an example. This is how I would do it if it were me. In my own childhood, my stepmother wasn't narcissistic, but she was riddled with anxiety and became really super controlling as a result. My banter, my energy, my light, whatever the heck you want to call it, unsettled her. That's what Wise Mind Heather in present day can tell you. That's what Heather in Wise Mind, who's had shit tons of therapy, can tell you. Little girl Heather, though, well, all she knew is that her family usually ate dinner without her. My stepmother would eat with my dad and my sister. And then I would be called down to eat by myself. No one would sit with me. No one would talk to me. I would just be by myself at the table. And all these years later, and all the work later, I can tell you that this is still hard to share without little tears kind of pricking in the back of my eyes because I really, really feel for her. And if you still cry for the younger versions of yourselves that didn't get what you deserved, that means you were healing too. It's okay to feel that. Still being sad about the hard part of your life that you didn't deserve doesn't mean you're not doing the work. It means you are doing the work, and Wise Mind has been invited in. So in Wise Mind, I would tell little girl Heather, yep, this is totally fucked. This feels strange because it is strange. Families shouldn't be like that. And you're right. She is manipulating the shit out of your father and out of the situation. And this shit is not normal. She is lying, spinning tales, and gaslighting for her own comfort. It's not your imagination. You were right. This doesn't make sense. And you were also right, your mother, if she were alive, would be appalled. You deserve better than this. There is nothing you could do that is so bad that it makes you deserve nights upon nights of eating by yourself. You were not sitting alone because you were weak. You were sitting alone because they are. So fuck them. I'm going to sit with you and you can tell me about your day and your daydreams and the hard parts. And someday when you have a family and more of a say, dinner can be just how you want it to be. Erica and all of you women listening, you have all been through a heck of a lot, but I think this is what the work looks like. You don't go digging and excavating for stories and examples, but the memories that do pop up, the ones that are renting space in your head without your permission. You do that exercise. It's intense emotional work. And in all transparency, I would really like that work to be done with a therapist or a coach or some sort of online practice or initiative. I think doing this work alone with just a journal is really quite lonely and isolating. If you have people that you can share this with, especially if you have a professional, this is work I would really encourage you to do with them, because you deserve a witness. You deserve support. You deserve to not be alone in your healing. You were already alone in your suffering. That being said, though, I know that some of you very well may be alone in this part of healing, and that can be true for any number of reasons. If this is you, I want you to know that inner child work is something you pace. You do it slowly. You go one at a time. Just like this podcast, inner child work, it's not bingeable. Tackle it with some of the less intense moments first, and if you can tolerate those, approach the harder ones with care. Respect trauma brain and its desire to hold you and to protect you. Go easy, take it slow, and stop when it becomes too much. All of that being said, Erica, it probably would be really healing for you to give the little girl Erica, who hurt so much that she wanted to leave us, some of that nurturing, validation, and attention. It doesn't have to be right now just because I said it on the podcast. Whenever you're ready is soon enough. But I think that's how you're going to find more healing. And Erica, I hurt for you and the questions you're bringing to the show. How do you have a relationship with your dad today, given all of this? This is a lot, and this is hard too. So I want you to breathe with me through it, okay? I'm going to try to go slow. I'm going to try to be gentle. But you also need to know and hear this. A relationship with your dad that is so tightly controlled by your mom isn't actually a relationship with your dad. It's a second relationship with your mother. And your mother doesn't sound safe to be in relationship with for a single relationship. Never mind two. The question, how do I, is probably in all likelihood the wrong question, because it's a setup to fail at the outset. Your mom can sabotage any attempt at anything helpful that you might try, so we need to shift your lens a little bit. What I would be encouraging you to do is starting to work on acceptance. This is who my mother is. This is who my father is. This is who they've been for my whole life. There is no changing either of them, and I have no control over the dynamics they put in front of me. As a result, given who I am and who I know myself to be, what do I want? What kind of relationship do I want with them? What are my limits? How can I be in relationship with them without becoming dysregulated? They are limited. Given that, what are they capable of? I hate when I ask this question. I hate it so much because I worry that it puts people on the defensive. So before you do any of that, you really should ask yourself, though, why you want these relationships in your life. You know who they are. You know their limitations. So why do you want to stay connected? I'm not asking this to make you defensive. I'm not asking this because I think you shouldn't stay connected. I'm asking because you really have to get clear on your why. Because if you were only putting yourself through all of this because you think you should, because it's expected of you, because it's the people pleaser in you, or to prolong grieving them all together, I would urge you to please pause and consider yourself before proceeding with them any further. Relationships based on expectation or what you should do aren't healthy, genuine relationships, so they're always going to be triggering for you. Trauma brain, by definition, will have to be on guard. And trauma brain is your bouncer. It is going to be on alert and protecting you, and you won't be able to engage in genuine connection. adult relationships with parents who have failed you as kids are possible, but we can't pretend these people aren't who we know them to be. We have to know who they are, accept who they are, and proceed accordingly. That's why I'm walking you through this, not because I'm questioning your choice, but because I want to help you take ownership of that choice. We want you in the driver's seat of your decision and of the decision-making process here. That's how we do this. You, Erica, say when. You say where. You say how much. And you even get to say stop. So now that we've tackled that, another deep breath. We're going to be deep breathing our way all through this. I'm realizing that I'm recording to you talking, Erica, like on the edge of my seat, half holding my own breath because I'm so careful with my words. I don't want to be understood, and I want so very much for you to hear my support. We're going to go deep on your question here because I think it's a question that a lot of listeners of the show have either struggled with or are currently struggling with. But that being said, I've already gone on for a bit of time here, and I have more to say, shocker. So I want you to just please just do a check-in with yourself. And I want everyone listening to do the same. Check in and see how regulated you are right now. See how you feel in your body. I myself just had to sit back in my chair a little bit. I was literally on the edge of my seat. It's okay to pause the episode. You don't need to tackle this whole conversation in a single sitting. We are talking about your entire life. It may not be realistic, possible, or even recommended to tackle this in a single sitting. You can pause this conversation and come back to it if it's all becoming too much. And I want all of you to please remember that. This, for me, has to be one of the most vulnerable parts of doing this show. I don't know how any of you are as you're listening. One person might have had a hard time with one part I said, while a lot of other people are fine with it. And then other people might be fine with things that someone else is having a hard time with. And I have no way of knowing that. I don't know if I'm going too fast, if I'm saying too much, if I'm being too painfully direct. And this is where I have to trust all of you to know what's best for yourselves and to take care of yourselves accordingly. This is also where I have to hope that all of you have come to trust my good intentions. I know I say really hard things, and I know I can be painfully direct at times, but I want you to trust that I want to be someone you can rely on to tell the truth. And I know I likely fuck it up a time or two in that I get it wrong or I make an assumption, but I work really hard to get it right. My intentions here are good, and I trust all of you to know that. So let's keep talking. Okay, here goes. Two other issues that you're struggling with often get tangled up for daughters of narcissists, and it seems like they're getting tangled up for you too. Many of you end up in this weird push-pull relationship between being people pleasers but also wanting to be seen and loved for who you are yourselves. You love others well, and your wish here in all of this is to be loved as well in return. And additionally, all of you, you're in this process of learning how to take up space, figuring out what it means to be seen inside relationships, and how do you take up space inside relationships. All of it becomes really confusing when it's all so new to you. So of course it's confusing. Of course it is. You've never had a healthy model for any of this. So many of you are probably figuring this out while you are in the relationships you're currently in. It probably feels like you're building the plane while it's in the air. Another piece to this conversation that's important is attachment, and the role of attachment styles when it comes to relationships. Now, I talked a bit about attachment in the fourth episode, and honestly, if I go too much further here about that, it's a whole rabbit hole that could make for its own follow-up episode. But for the purpose of the conversation here, I want to check in with you, Erica, on your attachment style. Most people I work with after childhood trauma have struggles of some form with attachment. Some might be anxiously attached. Others might be avoidantly attached. Most people I encounter have what we call in psychobabble land, disorganized attachment styles. So that means that sometimes they're anxiously attached and they want to be with their people all the time, while other times they're avoidantly attached and needing more time away from their people because intimacy becomes too much. I bring this up, Erica, not to complicate the conversation we're already having, but because it's what jumped into mind when you started talking about seeking attention from other people, even though you have healthy relationships. Given your parents and what you experienced from them, it would make sense to me if you struggled with disorganized attachment. And it would make sense to me that closeness with just your people might sometimes, in fact, feel suffocating for you, even though you really love them. And that might make you want to dispel or disperse that uncomfortable energy by talking to other people. Now, you brought a shame story to your question, and I'm going to invite you to bring in a self-compassion story, a story that helps you understand yourself and your needs inside of relationships. If you haven't considered the role of your attachment style and how it plays into your relationships, it would be worth considering. Considering your attachment styles and the role it takes in all of your lives is really incredibly important here. If you can do it in a loving way for yourselves that's absent of judgment, you really stand to learn so much about yourselves. Then we talk about needing attention and taking up space. I hear that you clearly own that you're a people pleaser. I would like to offer that as somebody taking ownership over this, that you change that moniker to recovering people pleaser. Now, here's what happens to a lot of people pleasers. You might hear that if you're a giver, you have to find other givers to be in relationship with. Otherwise, you'll end up with another taker. And while that makes for a good social media meme or quote every once in a while, it really is only partially true. We get into unwritten rules and habits inside of relationships so easily. The way we do something for a little while quickly becomes how we do it all the time. So if you have been friends with your friends for a while, or you have been in a relationship or married for a while, chances are there are a lot of habits between you that got built and defined when you first got together, so that maybe when you first got together, you didn't like compliments on your looks or on your clothes. Maybe you didn't like talking about yourself or your feelings. Maybe you didn't like taking up space, and your relationship got built and defined on those old parameters. You're bringing into this conversation, Erica, a desire to be seen. What does being seen look like for you now? What kind of attention do you want and do you seek? You first have to get clear on that for yourself, and then you can get clear on it with your people. Often, though, that is a super vulnerable ask, to ask for more compliments, to ask to take up space, to be seen for your accomplishments and how you move through the world. You want to know that and own it for yourself first, so you can be clear for yourself about who you are and how you move through the world. Then you want to acknowledge how comfortable it is to be seeking that kind of attention from people who aren't your people. It's not like it's a walk in the park, right? Then you want to find the courage to say, in your own words and in your own language, I love you, and I love our family, or I love our friendship. I used to think you would only be happy with me if I just took care of you all the time. I used to think that if I didn't have a purpose, or if I wasn't doing something, that I could be discarded. I'm realizing that that isn't true, but because I thought that, I haven't really been showing all of myself in this relationship. I don't think I'm letting you get to know me as well as you could. And I really would like to be known by you. You are really important to me. I'm laughing at myself because I know that is like pitch perfect therapist speak and nobody talks like that. I don't even talk like that. But that is the kind of message that we want to work on communicating. And that's the direction we're heading. We don't approach these conversations accusing people of not seeing us or not complimenting us because in all likelihood, we weren't allowing it and we weren't welcoming it into our relationships in the first place. Instead, we're communicating transparently, telling our loved ones what we want them to think and allowing ourselves to be seen. In regular everyday, this looks like answering honestly when someone asks you how you are, if that person is important to you. If you want to be in a better relationship with someone, you are offering details about your day when they ask for them. When they compliment you or show interest in you, you're thanking them and showing them appreciation for doing so. You are engaging in relationship with people the way you want to engage with people. The way that feels the most true for you and the way you want people to engage with you in return. Because when you get your needs met, you're able to recognize that and then you're saying thank you. When your needs aren't getting met, you're doing a little bit of a check-in with yourselves about that and getting curious, learning what that unmet need is telling you and then working on taking ownership over getting the need met. This doesn't mean doing it yourself. It means vulnerably sharing that you need someone instead of vulnerably sitting and hoping the need gets met without you having to ask. We're trading one vulnerability for another because honestly, none of this shit is easy. It's not easy sitting and waiting to be seen, and it is not easy asking to be seen, but showing up for ourselves, making decisions that make it so we can stop abandoning ourselves. Well, my friends, that is indeed the work. That is what it looks like. And if it were easy, I dare say everyone would be doing it. Holy hell, this episode's a lot. We really went through a lot together, and if you've made it through the end, I commend you here. Podcast stats tell me that most people stop listening to my episodes about halfway through, and that could easily make me think that I'm too much, and sometimes I do think I at least talk too much, but that's a little bit of how I roll. This is what telling the truth looks like for me, and this is what recovery looks like. And if people can only meet me halfway, I only want to meet those people halfway. That's respecting their boundaries and limits, and I am so good with that. I respect that, and I will always be here if they ever want to come back to continue the conversation. But I keep talking for the people who need the complete truth in their lives in order to heal because your healing is why I do this. You are in a community of women around the world who are in this with you, and I am too. Bye for now. I'm so grateful that you're here. You're right where you're supposed to be. At its heart, I'm hoping to use this show to build a community of women working together to heal from childhoods marked by maternal narcissism and emotional neglect. My goal for Mother Mayhem is that this show becomes an advice and mentoring-driven show where you share your questions, struggles, and stories, and I offer you direction for healing and recovery. That can't happen without your contributions. I invite you to send a recorded voice memo or write in an email with your questions and things you're struggling with. You can always find me over at heather@daughtersnpd.com. To connect further, I invite you to find me over at Instagram and occasionally on TikTok at DaughtersNPD. If you know another woman who needs this conversation in her life, I'm going to ask that you share the show with her. You can help me get the word out with your reviews and social shares of the show, and I hope you'll consider doing so. Special thanks to Heather Clark for editing this show. She's in my head and knows what I meant to say when the words come out backwards. Thanks for your time today. I'm always in it with you. Bye for now.